By a few hours, let's get a jump on tomorrow's National Beer Day celebrations. Joining me with the long view is Pennsylvania brewery historian Rich Wagner. Rich, welcome to Newsworks tonight.
Thank you.
Let's get into Pennsylvania's role, but first, what does National Beer Day actually celebrate?
It celebrates the return of beer after a 13-year-long prohibition.
So prohibition was starting in 1920?
20 to 1933. So on April 7th, the floodgates opened and people could drink legal beer again.
But of course, to take the long view, we have to go long before 1920 when evaluating Pennsylvania's role in all things suds.
Well, historically, Pennsylvania has always been in the top three in the country as far as either the number of breweries or the amount of beer produced. So usually New York was ahead, but then you had Pennsylvania and Wisconsin usually competing for second and third place.
When was the first heyday of breweries in Pennsylvania?
Well, in Philadelphia, first 1685. That was our first brewery in Philadelphia. With the introduction of lager beer in Philadelphia in 1840, that basically caught on beyond the ethnic German population and became what was considered a national beverage. Light lager beer was the thing that grew the industry in the United States and in the world.
What style or styles of beer did lager replace?
Well, the bottom fermented ales of the English style of beer. Of course, we were a British colony, so we had the customs and the tavern culture from England and as well as other places around the world all transplanted here. But when lager beer yeast, which was a bottom fermenting yeast, and it fermented in the cold, and you needed to age the beer for a much longer period, you got a much finer product. It was a refined beverage. And so this is what really made it catch on, because it was light, and it was refreshing, and it was cold.
At its height, how many brew pubs and breweries were there in the vicinity, and what caused the decline?
With the growth of lager beer, you had a lot of the lager beer saloons where they would actually make it on site, and it was just like a tavern or a saloon in the block among the houses. And then the larger companies came to predominate because they had economies of scale and they could, you know, invest in large tracts of real estate, build huge buildings, and take the production figures up to the, you know, quarter of a million barrels, let's say. And that was in the late 1800s. So when Prohibition arrived, we had about 40 breweries operating in the city of Philadelphia.
When you first did your study of the area, I believe around 1980, that was reduced to nine.
There were nine in the state. And it was just a matter of conjecture which one was going to be the next to go. And we were just waiting for all the dominoes to fall.
Is there a single person or an event that you can point to that launched, as it were, the renaissance in craft beer?
Well, if you really want to take it to one person, it's Jimmy Carter, who made homebrewing legal. By legalizing homebrewing, you started to have homebrew shops, and you had started people communicating and people saying, look at this beer we bought from England or Germany or some other place around the world. We could make that style 5 gallons at a time. And it was fun, and people really started to have a good time with it. And, of course, then you had people that said, let's try to do this for real, or let's do this for real. And some of these people that had started out making stuff on their stove ended up being some of the brewers that are in the top 20 producers in the country today.
How did you first get into this?
In 1980, a friend and I and our girlfriends went driving around Pennsylvania, and we went to go to all the tasting rooms of all the breweries in the state, and we made it to about six. When we got done, we found this book that listed where all the breweries in the country had been. So I circled all the towns on a map of Pennsylvania, and I said to my friend, we ought to go to every one of these towns and see if there's anything still standing of these breweries. We ran around to all these towns, photographing walls, some cases like a piece of a foundation or a stone that was part of the well or whatever, and all the way to watching them take some of these derelict buildings and turn them into beautiful, you know, repurposed structures, like the Stegmeyer Brewery up in Wilkes-Barre has been converted into a post office and federal office buildings and so forth. So I've seen a lot of this, not just the new breweries open, but some of the breweries that I thought would just crumble into the dirt have been turned into, in some cases, breweries again, and in other cases, just repurposed for other needs.
What's ahead for you in terms of research or passion? At this juncture, you've been to now some 800 breweries, I understand.
I still do my colonial brewing demonstration, and so that season is coming up in the spring and in the fall. We do a lot of brewing over an open fire at these historic sites and at beer festivals and so forth. So that's what's in my horizon.
I understand in the short term, the focus will be on Northern Liberties next month.
Oh, at the German Society. Yes, I'm giving a talk on Northern Liberties. When I added them up, there were either 99 or 103 breweries that have ever been in Northern Liberties throughout history.
So that's the derivation of the song, 99 Bottles of Beer on the Wall.
Could be.
Rich, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.